Good afternoon, fellow Patriots. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from the capital of Free Washington, Spokane Valley. Brought to you by the committee to elect Matt Shea Republican in the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. And it's not about right or left. It's about right and wrong. And we need to do the hard work to implement freedom, because our hope is not in man, but in Jesus Christ. And we can't end in prayer. We must also move to action. And as Exodus 15:3 says, the Lord is a warrior, the Lord is his name. Are we warriors? Are we true Christian warriors? Are we out there on the front lines? It's one thing to read about it, and we should read our Bible. We should study. It's another thing to go out and act upon that. And believe me, when you start acting and going down the road that the Lord has for you, in other words, there are books written about each one of us in heaven. If we start living out that destiny the Lord has for us, you really will start to encounter a ton of opposition. And I'm going to talk about one such man a little bit later today, because it just goes to show that anytime you get involved and you're on the side of right, the forces of evil, the forces of tyranny are going to come out against you. I remember the first time I ran. Nobody knew me. Didn't have anything other than my military service, really. But boy, they'll find it. They'll make it up. They will. They'll spin things. And that's the way the communists in the media operate. That's long echoed communist doctrine, decades and decades. And I use the word, and I use the term communist, because it is. Historically, it's backed up. If you go to the primary source documents, you can see it, you can read it. We're not going to have the art. Just go read it. Some people say, well, you can't use the word communist. Yes, I can, because that's who it is. And they're using communist doctrine from communist libraries and communist schools. We need to start calling out things for what they really are. And I think as Christians, we mistake grace and mercy for other people as an excuse not to speak out, call things out the way that they are. So I want to keep that in the forefront. Because you really can see the dividing lines based on ideology and what people are willing to say. People that aren't willing to speak out tend to compromise a little more. People that are willing to speak out tend not to. Now, when you do speak out, though, you got to do it in love. You can't be the 4% that's the anchor on the good ship humanity and driving everybody away from you. You have to do it in the right way, using wisdom. I just think that's important for us to understand. Well, I also want to just weigh in one last time on the national anthem. Looks like they're finally caving. Goodell's finally saying, hey, everybody needs to stand. But then it's not genuine. It's just not genuine. We know where your heart is now. Some of you players in the NFL, we know where your heart is. It's not genuine that you're forced to stand for that. You do it because you respect the sacrifice. You respect the country and the Constitution. You don't do it because you're forced to. As you harbor secretly in your heart this resentment toward America, which I find just beyond humorous, that you have a bunch of multimillionaire football players that are making an argument that America just somehow is no longer the land where you can start from nothing and reach heights that are unbelievable. I find that humorous. Many of you do too, I know it. Because it's silly. To a great extent, you can still work hard in America and make it. Actually, the greatest obstacle ends up being the government, bureaucracies, and government bureaucrats who seize through taxes or regulations the fruit of your labor. So you want to talk about what we need to take care of? Let's look at that. Get out of the way of the hardworking Americans. And that brings me now to your daily intelligence brief. On the international front in the Middle East, Kurdish independence now kind of very quiet over there. Flashpoint is still Kirkuk, still some maneuvering happening. But more importantly, today in Catalonia, after the overwhelming independence vote via referendum, the Catalan president and other regional leaders signed a declaration of independence from Spain. However, they have suspended its implementation for several weeks to allow talks with the government in Madrid. So they're coming across very reasonable. I mean, the document is very clear that they signed. It is a declaration of independence for Catalonia to be recognized as an independent and sovereign state. Now, the Spanish government, despite the fact almost 90% of the voters backed independence, and yes, there were the anti-independence voters who largely boycotted the ballot. But the fact of the matter is, the government of Spain is now prepared to arrest the Catalan president. I'm going to talk about escalating. I mean, they've said, hey, we want to declare independence. We're more than willing to talk to you about it. Let's see if there is more heavy-handed tactics coming out of the Spanish government. Right now, I think we are seeing something that is going to ripple across Europe. There are many other independence movements. And as the home countries and also the European Union continue overbearing policies, you're going to see this happen. And that brings us to the next story. Very interesting. The country they chose to do this in, European Union. I don't know why you would do this, honestly. I don't know why you would pick this country. But the EU prosecutes Ireland. It's coming to us from the Daily Caller. Prosecutes Ireland for not collecting enough taxes. And the Irish are saying, hey, we're going to defend the integrity of our tax system. Right? And so is the EU. So, I mean, of all the countries to, as a group of United Kingdoms, to come and say, hey, we're going to charge you more taxes, or we're going to make you collect more taxes, or you're not collecting enough taxes, it probably wasn't the wisest thing to choose Ireland. The last time that happened, well, there was quite a dust up for many, many years. And I look at this, and part of it is over illegal tax benefits to Apple. But the fact the European Union now is trying to squeeze tax money out of countries, I think that's just going to keep this independence movement that we're seeing in Catalonia continuing across Europe. I mean, there's all kinds of different places. The Basque region. You have the area north of Portugal. This is just in Spain. You've got other regions as well. And I think what we're seeing is something I talked about over the summer. And it's called neo-tribalism. It's the return to tribalism. It's really the only way to weather massive crises and the decline and disintegration of empires is neo-tribalism. You go throughout history, and Sir John Glubb writes a little bit about this, at least impliedly. But I'm of the volition that the idea of neo-tribalism is correct, because you're going to depend on everyone that you know locally. And that tribe can be, like Catalonia, can be a little bigger. It could be just a region of freedom, like the American Redoubt. But it's people that are of like mind, who are hardworking, and who understand the signs of the times, and just naturally gravitate together as a tribe. And the internet's actually helping people do this as well. You have tribes of ideology, as it were. So I think we're seeing this rise of neo-tribalism, and people want to be independent. They want to have their representatives in government more accurately and closely reflect their ideology, beliefs, heritage, and culture. And people are finally saying, we've had enough. And in Catalonia, you know, they're sending a lot of their money to other parts of Spain to prop up the rest of Spain when they want to keep the fruits of their labor. And this is the same undertone here in Ireland that's happening as well. They want to keep the fruits of their labor. And we're seeing that here in this area of the United States. We're seeing it in other areas of the United States, in Appalachia and Texas. So this is a natural progression. So remember that term neo-tribalism, this idea of returning to local groups of people who share common belief, culture, heritage, ideology. And this has nothing to do with ethnicity, as it were, but it has to do with this commonality of beliefs. And that when you can protect it at the local level, you can save it and preserve it for the next generation. And we'll talk about that a little bit more, maybe on a future show. All right. Also on the international front, North Korea. Drudge Report has several headlines on this, but I just want to go into a couple. Trump has summoned his generals to a war room over North Korea. General Mattis has said to the United States military and to the Army specifically, stand ready. Apparently, some battle plans for South Korea and the United States have been hacked, presumably by the North Koreans, although I kind of wonder if they have that ability. Maybe it was China, who knows? The hack that we mentioned here a couple of weeks ago, that was brought up by Symantec, one of the foremost cybersecurity firms in the country. It talked about how U.S. power companies had been targeted and hackers had gained access to the grid to such an extent that they could have shut down the grid at will. Well, now today, North Korea is apparently the culprit behind targeting U.S. electric power companies with spear phishing emails. And this is coming from another cybersecurity company called FireEye, and it was released exclusively to NBC News. But what we're seeing happen is a massive ramp up. And it appears that we are headed towards some sort of military action in North Korea. Maybe not right soon, but close enough where U.S. generals and senior politicians were meeting today over this thing. So we're going to keep our eyes on this as this unfolds. But for all of us back here in the Great American Redoubt, we need to get prepared for all eventualities. We just need to be prepared, okay? The North Koreans are gaining access to our power grid. They're threatening EMPs. You have a very clear indication of where they want to target. We need to be prepared for that. Can you live off-grid? Do you have enough food for your family and your friends? Do you have enough ways to either get water or have water stored? Do you have enough medical supplies? Just basic things. And it's amazing how quickly things can change. And I know that a lot of people fight that because of normalcy bias, but we need to get past that and realize that things are really beginning to ramp up all over the world. And I think most of you probably feel it in your hearts. So act on that. Don't sit around anymore making excuses. Act on it. And it's not out of fear. It's just out of love for your neighbor. And in fact, it takes the fear out of things when you're ready and you're prepared. On the national front, and this is very interesting to me anyway, where you have understanding the threat. Okay, we had Chris Gabatz on last month. John Guandolo's been on the show. Understanding the threat assesses the Las Vegas attack as a jihadi operation. Another website has come out and proven with scientific evidence that there had to have been a second shooter and where that shooter was located. It's interesting. I talked to somebody who was there, and that was their belief as well. But here is the interesting part of this. The Islamic State has never claimed responsibility for an attack where the attack has not been a jihadi. And this is coming from understanding the threat. So I think this kind of gives us a little bit more perspective. The timeline down there is also changing, where a security guard was actually shot before the shots began to rain down on the folks in the square. So this is one thing I think we just need to really, really keep watching. I have this gut feeling that we're going to be kind of shocked when finally things come out. Also on the national front, The Economist, not known as a bastion of Austrian economics, has come out with a bubble warning, essentially saying that asset prices across the country and across the board are high and that we may be approaching a bubble. Many other people have actually said this as well, but to have The Economist come out and finally admit it, very interesting. It's something we should also take into consideration. Also on the national front, and one of my favorite articles of the last week, the Pentagon cuts ties with the liberal Southern Poverty Law Center. This coming from LifeSide News. Just super excited about this. Southern Poverty Law Center has been itself kind of a hate group for a long time. Many of you have heard me talk about it on the show. These are the folks that tried to say that there were no such thing as Irish slaves and Irish indentured servants coming to America and other just off-the-wall ridiculous stuff. They use their hate map to really smear people. And now the Department of Defense is saying no more SPLC. And I hope law enforcement agencies, peace officer agencies across the country follow suit. I really do. It's about time. So I really give General Mattis some kudos for that. All these little things are going on behind the scenes. A lot of people don't know about it. And I just, it's one positive, you know. Take it when we can get it. Also on the national front, Antifa has decided they are picking November 4th as the date they're going to launch essentially a communist revolution. Now, they've done some things before where they blocked traffic across freeways and done some of this stuff. And it's kind of interesting that they chose November 4th because it's almost exactly 100 years after the Bolshevik Revolution that took Russia out of its relative calm into a horrific 80 years. And the New American has an article, great article about all of this, of what all has been admitted by Antifa. And they claim to be anti-fascist, but actually they are, it's called projection. They project on other people the way they are themselves. So remember, November 7th, 1917. That was the Bolshevik Revolution. Okay, so this is very close. So I see this as kind of symbolic. They want to launch this. Police departments all over the country are preparing for this. And they are expecting that their violence is going to somehow galvanize the forces of the left. And just more civil unrest is what we're gonna see. More civil unrest. Also on the national front, very interesting, and another positive coming out of Washington, D.C., but specifically the Congressional Western Caucus, Department of Interior, and the Bureau of Land Management are beginning to unwind the grouse, sage grouse, if you're familiar with this, regulations and policies implemented under the Obama administration. These are the ones that just job killing time and time again. They're getting ready to remove that. And they're also removing a 20-year mineral moratorium on 10 million acres proposed by the Obama administration as well. So we're seeing the lands in the West now being opened up again. So another big positive coming out of the Trump administration, and not a lot of people talking about it. This is on the Congressional Western Caucus press release. So some good work is actually happening in Washington, D.C. All right, I also want to go to the regional front, talk about the Bundy Ranch trial. Judge Navarro has allowed the transfer of Ammon and Ryan Bundy to the Henderson jail, which is a better situation for them. Finally, she blinked because of the treatment that they've been receiving in the federal pen with strip searches, etc., most of them unnecessary, as I understand it. But moving them now to Henderson. So there's kind of a little glimmer of hope there. And also another interesting glimmer of hope, this coming from Readout News. And if you don't know Readout News, you need to go to Readout News, follow them. They have so much great information about local specific stuff that papers, for example, in downtown Spokane don't mention. And these folks at Readout News, Sherry DeVale, specifically, brought up a really good point. There was a statement put out on the 12th of April, 2014, from the director of the Bureau of Land Management, Neil Korns. Okay. And in that statement, he says, "We ask that all parties in the area remain peaceful and law-abiding." Well, wait a minute. I thought that they were prosecuting because they weren't law-abiding and they weren't being peaceful. But here you have a statement from the Bureau of Land Management's director to the contrary. And I think Readout News brings up a great point. Are they hiding evidence that we don't know about? And why, again, is Attorney General Jeff Sessions allowing this prosecution to continue? So great point by Readout News. We're going to keep following up on the trial as it continues. Also on the regional front, Hearst continues to be devastating to the economy. I've talked about some of the figures. People are just, they're sharing it all over the place, and I'm glad because it is so, when you look at the numbers, it is just so unbelievable how much devastation has occurred from this decision by the Washington State Supreme Court. $6.9 billion in lost economic activity each year, $452 million I'm sorry, million in lost employee wage dollars. Nearly 9,300 lost jobs, 392.7 million in lost taxes, 37 billion with a B in lost property values, and 346 million in property taxes shifted to other properties in Washington. Just unbelievably devastating. And then you have almost 6 billion in losses to the construction industry annually. Again, this according to BIW report that was released and was done by HR2 Research and Analytics. But just showing us what the devastation of judicial interference is creating. Also on the regional front, this is an interesting story out of Seattle. This comes from The Liberator. It's an abolitionist publication. Now, abolition referring to abolishing abortion. A homosexual coffee shop owner refused to serve a group of peaceful Christian abolitionists, and they have it on video. And the owner comes out with a letter later justifying it. Now, here's the interesting part about this. Remember back to Baronelle Stutzman down in the Tri-Cities. She owns a flower shop in the Tri-Cities. She says, I'm going to serve you. I'll sell you flowers. But then the person comes in and says, hey, will you do this wedding ceremony for me and participate in this wedding ceremony for me? And she says, no, I can't do that. So she had sold things. We're talking about a coffee shop owner. There's no ask to be participating in any Christian ceremonies or anything like that. They were just straight up refused service. So the question is, will Attorney General Ferguson prosecute that coffee shop? And the answer is, obviously, for most of us, clearly he's not going to do it, which shows the hypocrisy of what they're doing. It is solely anti-Christian. They're going to go after a florist down in Tri-Cities who just doesn't want to participate in a wedding ceremony, and they're going to justify refusing service to peaceful Christians in a coffee shop. That's amazing, but it's happening. Also on the local front, a lot of things happening as well, but I want to highlight October 11th, so we're talking tomorrow night down at Darcy's. I'm going to be giving a presentation on the 51st state, and you can get down there around, 6:30. Look forward to seeing everybody there. If you want to learn more about the 51st state, how it's real, we are unveiling the flag on the 12th of October at my annual Freedom Fundraiser at Trezzi Farm Winery at 6 o'clock. And you can buy tickets on Eventbrite. And again, that's October 12th, Trezzi Farm Winery, 6 o'clock. Also on October 19th at Center Place at 7 o'clock, we're going to have Tom DeWeese talking about Agenda 21, Agenda 2030. I remember a speech when he came here to Spokane a few years ago, just had massive repercussions for the local area and the positive. And if you want to learn more about what he is doing and how to fight back on a lot of these property rights things, and that's who our guest is today, come to Center Place, 7 o'clock, October 19th. October 23rd at Candlelight Christian Fellowship in Coeur d'Alene, 6 o'clock, is going to be the Patriot Academy fundraiser. And if you want to help support the next generation of young Christian constitutional leaders, this is the thing you want to support. October 23rd, Candlelight Christian Fellowship in Coeur d'Alene. And I hope to see everybody this week at either Darcy's on October 11th or my annual Freedom Rally fundraiser on October 12th. That is the briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Thank you to everybody that's been praying for us. Please keep praying for us. We really need it. And if you get a chance, make sure you go to Facebook.com/Patriot Radio US. Like the page, share it with your friends and family. And if you want to contribute to the show, go to VoteShea.com. Well, again, my guest today is Tom DeWeese of American Policy Center. And I want to brag on Tom a little bit right now, because I don't think he gets enough credit for a lot of things he does. Look at Tom DeWeese. In 2006, was invited to Cambridge University to debate the issue of Agenda 21, the United Nations, all this stuff, before the Cambridge Union, a 200-year-old debating society. Now, he's today the founder and president of American Policy Center. He's the editor of the Deweese Report. But for 40 years, he's been a businessman, a grassroots activist, a writer, a publisher, and somebody who has always kept us grounded in the Constitution. Tom, thank you very much for joining me once again on Patriot Radio.
Hey, it's good to be with you, Matt. Thank you.
A lot of us have been praying for you. I know you've had a kind of a tumultuous summer, to say the least. Hope you're doing well. How are things going for you?
Well, we're staying busy. I have been traveling extensively and ready to do it again here next week, coming out your way. And so just not much time to sit around and worry about things. Just got to keep going.
That's all you can really do, isn't it? You have to just keep moving forward.
Yes.
Well, our thoughts and prayers will continue to be with you. Well, let's dive right in then. Agenda 21 and Agenda 2030. Well, wait a minute. Did they run out of time? What happened?
You know, it's funny. I've said that I always continue to talk about Agenda 21, and people will rush up to me and they'll say, no, it's now Agenda 2030. The fact of the matter is that all they do, about every 10 years, they reboot it so that they can get their people excited. Here's the new game plan and so forth. The Agenda 2030, which they brought out in 2015, nothing new there. All they've really done is gone into more detail of how they intend to do the things they came out with in 1992 at the Earth Summit. They said then that Agenda 21 is a comprehensive blueprint for the reorganization of human society. They told us straight out at the time, and people couldn't wrap their head around what they meant by that. And the Agenda 2030 put 17 goals down to tell you what they meant by that. Nothing new, but it's more detailed.
So what are these goals that they have? Because I think a lot of people just think, this is all conspiracy theory. Tom DeWeese, this is just conspiracy theory.
Yeah. Well, interestingly, they said in the preamble to this, they said all countries and all stakeholders acting in collaborative partnership will implement this plan. We are determined to take the bold and transformative steps which are urgently needed to shift the world into a sustainable and resilient path. Those are their words in the preamble of this Agenda 2030. And it's interesting that they mention stakeholders. When I speak, I always tell people, you know, when you read documents that are, you know, the visioning documents, the comprehensive plans and community, and it'll reference stakeholders. And people think that means the people that live there. It doesn't. Stakeholders are non-governmental organizations, private organizations with their own private agendas. Lots of times they're international organizations. The one thing they are is not local. But they come in and say, here's what you got to do because we're the stakeholders. But the goals, the 17 goals, the first one, and this is right out of the Millennium goals that they put out in 2000, end poverty in all its forms everywhere. The interesting thing about that is that the only answer that they have for ending poverty is redistribution of wealth. Nowhere in their documents will they talk about how they can set up a system, economic system, where the poor can get off government programs and build their own wealth and you know, have a life of their own and be independent. Nowhere does it talk about that. It's all about taking out of your pocket and putting in their pocket. The only problem with that is that tomorrow they need some more, and the next day they need some more. And pretty soon, if they keep that up, then you are going to need assistance. And so what we have in their efforts to end poverty is a growth product called more poverty. The billions of dollars that we have spent, trillions probably, over the years to eradicate poverty, we have never, ever even come close. What we've done is gotten more poor. So, you know, it's an interesting goal.
It is an interesting goal, but that's how these guys operate. It really is.
Yeah, they just play with words. And the fact of the matter is, it's what, you know, the whole effort to end poverty is what I call the compassion cartel. And there's private organizations as well as government organizations involved in this. If you were to end poverty, they'd be out of business. They can't afford to have that happen any more than the American Cancer Association can afford to have cancer eradicated because they'd be out of business. And, you know, so you end up with more and more and more of it. You know, goal number two, end hunger. Achieve food security and improve nutrition and promote sustainable agriculture. That is an oxymoron because sustainable agriculture means lower food production and higher costs and control of the seeds. They have seed banks and plant banks controlling all these things in great big warehouses. And this is once again the UN global control of what we eat. And that's goal number two.
I want to highlight on that one for a second. You know, one thing that crosses party lines, ideological lines, is the idea of food freedom. I can grow whatever I want to in my backyard. But you mentioned something that I think a lot of people don't understand the implications of: seed banks. That means there's only one place you could go get your seeds. So they would be able to control literally what you grew, even if it was in your own backyard.
Absolutely. And under sustainable farming, they will literally come in and tell you what kinds of crops you can grow and how you're to grow them, how much energy you're to use in growing them, how, you know, if you're allowed to use any kind of substance to, you know, get rid of pests that, so they can grow. And, you know, all these things come into it. And, you know, all that does is create a lower yield and create higher prices in a production of food.
And obviously, that's their intent, is to create this type of artificial scarcity. So let's go on to goal number three.
Number three is ensure healthy lives and promote well-being at all ages. You will find in all of the visioning plans for every community, it talks about ensuring healthy lives. This is really interesting because when you get down to the details of what do they mean by healthy lives, well, that means getting people out of their cars and into walking paths and riding bikes and, you know, being outside. And, of course, we don't want to have any meat intake there because that's not healthy for you, so that's not sustainable. But, you know, there's a building in San Francisco, a government building. When it came out probably 6 or 7 years ago when it was built, they said this was the most sustainable government building in the country. One of the interesting features of it was the elevator only stopped on every other floor. So you would have to walk up steps and be healthy to get to where you were going.
Credit goes to whoever dreams this stuff up. They're probably playing video games somewhere. I don't know.
Well, right. You know, the thing here is that all this stuff comes together by these non-governmental organizations inside the UN. In the UN Charter, it specifically talks about non-governmental organizations being basically equal to government representatives and you know, others involved in the UN. They are an entity on their own, and you don't just because you have an organization, you aren't an NGO, you've got to be sanctioned by the United Nations. And once that is done, then you have the opportunity to be inside these meetings with your own private agenda, sitting there debating, arguing, and inserting these ideas in there. That's why these things are all over the place like this, because you've got thousands of these NGO organizations that are writing these documents. They wrote Agenda 21. They wrote the Biodiversity Treaty. On and on and on, and I know they wrote this Agenda 2030 plan as well. This is what they do, and so it's, you know, they get their private agendas in there. You've got some people who are, you know, their whole purpose is promoting cutting back on energy use or controlling water use, or, you know, maybe just pushing bike paths or heritage areas, things like this. That all gets written up in here as part of the entire agenda.
Wow. What other goals do they have?
Let's see. Goal number four, ensure inclusive and equitable quality education and promote lifelong learning opportunities for all. This is one of the main ones here. the basically, when they talk about lifelong learning, they mean we're going to have a hold of you all of your life so that you can be re-indoctrinated over and over and over again, so you don't get some crazy beliefs off to the side and go off in the wrong direction. That's what it really means. Now, they make it sound like we're just all going to just keep moving forward. What it really means is that they will make sure that you have the desired attitudes and values and beliefs to make sure you are a perfect global village idiot who never asks questions about why do we do it this way. And, you know, one of the great fears of these people, they see this as a well-ordered society, and, you know, they are, the greatest fear they have is that someday a Thomas Edison, a Henry Ford, or Wright brothers will show up and mess it all up and take people off in another direction nobody ever thought of, because that's what happened. You know, Alexander the Great and Thomas Jefferson lived in the same world. They both had their homes lit by candlelight, and they both had their travel by horseback. And, you know, you take it 100 years onto the future, Thomas Edison comes along, lights up the night, completely changes our lifestyles. Henry Ford puts you in a car and has you moving much faster than anybody ever did before. Wright brothers dared to think we could fly. And one of the things they advocate in these things, there's an organization called the Eden Foundation, NGO out of the UN. They advocate globally acceptable truth. And I had the misfortune of talking to the head of this organization through some emails one Sunday afternoon, and he said, the reason we have wars, the reason we have strife, the reason we have poverty is because there's too much information. It's so difficult for the average person to understand what's the right decision to make. How do I live my life? What do I do? And so, well, we'll do it for you. Here is your globally acceptable truth. It's a real thing.
It is. Yeah, it is. Yeah. Whether we want it or not.
Yeah.
All right. Well, what are some of the other goals that have stood out to you as kind of being egregious or just outlandish? Because you see some of these things in writing, and people will just kind of say, "Oh, those are just aspirational. They don't really mean anything." But that they when they put a goal down, they actually mean it. They want to implement this, and virtually every goal that they put down,
absolutely,
if not all,
yeah.
Is socialism. Yeah.
In goal number six is a major one: ensure availability and sustainable management of water and sanitation. Now, I used in my article I wrote on this, I used the example of California, where you know, they've gone through the founders, original pioneers in California, found a desert there in a lot of areas, and they built a very sophisticated water control system, and the result was they kind of created an emerald paradise. And it was interesting that back 10, 15 years ago, how the environmentalists just were salivating over getting control of that green paradise, and they did. And they started tearing down dams and destroying that entire system. Guess what? Today, big parts of it are a desert. You know, it's, you know, when these guys say that man is not part of the the environment, then this is what they find out. Yeah, we are, and we've learned over the years to control that environment to an advantage, but now they're taking all that control away, and it's reverting back to the way it was. So.
And you see wildfires, and you see all kinds of other horrific consequences of doing those kind of things. We're seeing it up here in Washington, too, where they try to control the water, and, you know, all of a sudden, you know, massive devastation to the economy in Washington State.
Yeah, the whole thing with forest management, this is just, it defies logic. They determined that it is natural not to remove the trees. Again, man's not part of the ecology, so it's don't remove the trees because they fall down naturally. What you end up with is 10, 15, 20 feet of kindling on the floor of the forest. That's why they're burning hotter than they've ever burned before. You know, former Congresswoman Helen Chenoweth took a congressional group into the forest to show them that not even little animals could could get in through all this kindling on the floor. And this is just bad management. And now we have, I mean, we're not allowed to cut the trees for man's use, but burning millions of acres of it is, well, that's okay. That's natural. That's the insanity of it.
But, just absolutely absurd.
Yeah.
It's absurd.
Yeah. Here's another one. Goal number 9. Build a resilient infrastructure, promote inclusive and sustainable industrialization, and foster innovation. Now, I defy them to define to me or describe to me how they get innovation when you're supposed to be in lockstep and not allowed to think side to side. Where's the innovation going to come from? But interestingly, as you know, we have all these communities putting together these vision plans, these comprehensive development plans, and just earlier this year, we found a quote that just threw me on the floor. I couldn't believe that I was reading this. And you hear this, Matt. You hear these guys talking about in these meetings the chaotic growth of cities. We've got to control that. I mean, that sounds familiar, right? Get this quote: "The chaotic growth of cities will be replaced by a dynamic system of urban settlement. The region is formed by the economic interdependence of its development from the industrial complex. The region has a single system of transportation, a centralized administration, and a united system of education and research." There's that lifelong learning again. Regionalism, all this, a single system of transportation. Guess what this quote is? This was written by an architect named Alexei Gutanov. It was written in 1968. He is a Soviet-Russian architect, and the article he was writing was "The Ideal Communist City: Sustainable Development."
There it is, and yep. That's why I'm going to jump to goal 16, because that's exactly what I was going to ask. I mean, that sounds exactly like communism, like straight out of the communist doctrines of the former Soviet Union and even a little bit prior. I mean, this is where it came from.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. No question. Yeah. Goal 16 is promote peaceful and inclusive societies for sustainable development, provide access to justice for all, and build effective, accountable, and inclusive institutions at all levels. That is social justice. It comes to social engineering. And we're seeing this happen all across the country. And, for example, in Baltimore, Maryland, the NAACP filed a lawsuit against Baltimore saying that Section 8 housing, government housing, causes ghettos. You know, well, duh, we could have told them that. We did tell them that. And they, you know, just do it anyway. You put all, you know, push all these people into one area and then dictate to them how they're going to live. Here's the income you're allowed to have, and this is the way it's going to be. And now you end up with, and of course, we're bringing all these illegal immigrants in and so forth. So you've got MS-13 gangs there. You've got drugs. You've got prostitution. You've got everything else all in there. And so a ghetto is formed. So the NAACP filed suit against the city of Baltimore and saying that this causes ghettos. They won the lawsuit, and the reward for it, the judgment for it was, well, to make it all equal and fair, what they need to do is move the Section 8 housing into upscale neighborhoods. That'll solve the whole problem. Everybody will be happy that way. That is social engineering, and what's going to happen is the people who have worked hard to build a life of their own and invest and so forth are going to see their property values plummet, and their neighborhood now is going to become a ghetto because they are not addressing what the problem is. They are just spreading it somewhere else. This is social justice. This is getting after white privilege, you know, the whole thing that we're hearing today.
So you're going to be here in Spokane on the 19th at Center Place, 7 o'clock. Give the listeners a little bit of a teaser. What are you going to be talking about? What are you going to be teaching them?
Well, I'm going to talk about these very things, what this all leads to. And one of the things I'm going to do, which I've done a few times across the country, is I'm going to show people how their government actually operates. That, you know, you may have five county commissioners. That's not your government. There are all these NGO organizations and dictating how things happen. Why, when you go in there to try to talk to them about these policies, you mention the word Agenda 21, you get the eye roll, you get the sigh, you know, and you get escorted out the door. You know, I'm going to talk to them about that and show some things they can do to kind of turn that around.
Well, I'm really looking forward to it. And I know that you've been working very, very hard to create essentially a packet that anybody in any community, anywhere in the country can get and then use to start pushing back on a lot of this stuff, because really the fight is going to be won at the local level. Could you describe that for the listeners?
Absolutely. The fighting at the local level is where we have to go. You spend all your time trying to deal with Congress and president and all that. I fully believe if we can turn things around at the local level, it'll go up. And, you know, you in the state legislature, if you suddenly see local communities starting to defend private property rights against everything, you begin to pass legislation to help that happen, because that's become a popular thing to do. It's been an effective thing to do. So you'll see that happen. Eventually, you'll see Congress begin to do the same thing. But if you try to do it the other way around, it'll never happen. And this is just some of the things that that we're teaching people with that. And by the way, I'm about 3 months behind on it, but I'm working on a new book. I'm getting there. It's covering all these things, and most importantly, it's going to cover very positive solutions. And the title of it is Sustainable: The War on Free Enterprise, Private Property, and Individuality. So we're coming. It's almost there.
Well, I'm looking forward to that, and we'll have you back on when you do get that published. I want to end the show with this. We're seeing across the world, and inside the United States too, there's a movement really to split states, split territories, to better reflect the ideology, the heritage, the culture, the values of the people, because people are, you know, they're getting, a lot of places are getting fed up with their money being taken to support somebody else. What are your thoughts on the trend of this happening, and do you think some of this United Nations garbage is really playing into it?
Oh, without question. I mean, number one, whether it's Agenda 21 or everything else the United Nations is working on, number one target is independent national sovereignty, national countries having their own ideas, their own way of doing things. They call it harmonizing us into the rest of the world. And the United States, for example, we're set up different than almost every other nation on earth. We were set up with the idea that we were born God-given rights, and it was government's job to protect those rights. Almost every other country is set up to where government tells you, here's what your rights are today. Whatever gang's in charge that moment, that's what your rights are. And of course, the United Nations operates that way. And so the United States stood as a major roadblock in their goals for global governance, and they needed to find a way to get us to give up our rights voluntarily. And, you know, I like to say, Matt, we've had megalomaniacs throughout history trying to take over the world and rule the world, and they've always had big battles and wars going on and oppress people. And the question is, what if somebody decided to take over the world, and they had a plan, a message, that not only did they not have to fire a shot, they actually got the people they're going to oppress to help them do it? What would be the most powerful message that they could use to make that happen? How about the threat of environmental Armageddon? Doesn't matter what rights you think you have if you don't have a planet to stand on. That is sustainable development. That is what the United Nations and all these NGOs have gotten onto, and that is what they're doing. They're getting us all to say, oh, goody, thanks, we'll help. Yeah, it's a good idea. And they're taking over the world and oppressing us with our help.
Well, Tom, thank you very much once again for joining me. It's always a pleasure to have you on. If you could, real quick, plug your website where people can go to find out more information.
The American Policy Center. Our website is AmericanPolicy.org. We have on there, as you mentioned, we've really been focusing on trying to put tools together to help the activists fight back. We've got an action kit that's got four manuals and two DVD sets and a bunch of other stuff in it. We've got a smaller version, a manual that has the details in there, and then I've got the Cliff Notes version, a little booklet that has the basics in it. And of course, you can find my book Erase, which is the novel I wrote this last year, and really been compared to Atlas Shrugged in 1984, to my shock, and covering an awful lot of these issues.
Well, I look forward to seeing you when you show up on the 19th, and I look forward to talking to you a little bit more as well. Take care. We're praying for you. Keep up the great fight that you're doing and the great work you're doing as well.
I appreciate it, Matt, and I love working with you.
All right. Tom DeWeese, American Policy Center, once again, fighting the good fight and on the front lines of the battle for freedom and liberty. Just to reiterate, for those of you that missed it at the beginning of the show, October 11th, so tomorrow, at Darcy's, 51st State presentation is 7 o'clock. And we're going to be talking about a lot of different things, but primarily, how can this happen and is it real? A lot of people have been asking questions about that. On October 12th, so the Thursday, going to be doing my annual Freedom Rally fundraiser up at Trezzy Farm Winery at 6 o'clock. October 19th at Center Place in the Valley, 7 o'clock. Tom DeWeese, who was just on, is going to be talking about Agenda 21 and now this new Agenda 2030, same thing, but how you can fight back specifically. It's always great to hear him when he comes to speak. And lastly, October 23rd at Candlelight Christian Fellowship in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, 6 o'clock to 8:30. Patriot Academy's annual fundraiser, and if you want to sow into the next generation, the youth, that is the event to attend. I really support what they're doing out there. Again, October 23rd, 6 o'clock at Candlelight Christian Fellowship in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. May God bless all of you, and may he make this generation the greatest one.